I'm here in Talla and I'm talking to Maureen Phibbs. Maureen, from Blackrock, Blessington is where you're living now.
That's right.
But you were born in 1941.
That's right. And
in a totally different part of the country.
Quite right, yes. I was born in Gutnacrethe, near Cullen, in North County Cork. I suppose an area immersed in local history and tradition and music and song and dance. And I was born there in 1941, I suppose. From my front door where I lived, I looked across over the mountains, and when I was about, I suppose, 3 or 4, I thought the mountains was the end of the world, and there was nothing beyond those mountains. One was Mushra and Clara Mountain, and we could see the two paps on the Kerry borders of Cork and Kerry every day from my front door. That was the famous goddess Dana,
yeah.
Danu. From there, I mean, that was it. I went to school in Cullen, and I suppose one of the great places first of all, both my father and mother would have been, I suppose, proud of their past, and there was no radio, of course. It was pre-electricity. There was no radio. Local history stories we were probably told, and that was interspersed probably with all old legends, which were in our school books at the time, of Finn McCool and the Fian and all that. And my mother too, of course, was, I suppose, a huge influence in my life, and brought in a lot of her history of her family, she being from the Scullies of Kentork, Rossacon. They've been there for 10 generations, of which she was very proud. I think it was 11 generations growing up there now. And she had about... the Scullies, of course, came with at the Battle of Knocknanos. They were he was the flag bearer, one of the Scullies. Three Scullies brothers came. But you see, we had all this type of thing, which was fantastic, I suppose, really. He was a huge influence on me. And I think I thought probably everybody had knew as much about their local area and their local place. And Cullen then, as Cullen, of course, on the River Araglan. Cullen was a great place. We had the fishes in the summertime. And at school, we were always learning off stories and poems to participate in the fish in Cullen. And my mother was always talking about the local poet there, Edward Walsh. Well known in some places, Edward Walsh. And of course, I suppose I thought everybody knew about Edward Walsh as well, but he was a tremendous, he collected so many legends of the South. There was a Munster, the Munster area, all about, I mean, we were always listening to stories about the chieftains of Munster and the O'Callaghans and the McAuliffes, the O'Keefes, huge amount of talk. And this was all interspersed in my early days. And it certainly had a huge influence on me. And it was fantastic to have that in our life.
Oh, what was your maiden name?
Yeah.
Sorry. Your own family name was?
My own family name was Hickey. And there are hundreds of Hickeys around Cullen. And there was a great Padraig O'Hickey. Everybody knew Padraig. A lot of people knew Padraig. He lived over the Bones Ditch from us, this farm, a giant ours. Our names were Hickey. Our name, of course, was Hickey. My father was Con Hickey, Cornelius Hickey. And of course, you'd hear the history, and the genealogies were traced as often most nights, or not most nights, but often at night, you'd hear the people in and they'd talk about genealogies and the histories of families and people.
They could trace
and trace and trace. So that influenced me as well.
Some of the politicians, like Bat O'Keefe, he came from that area.
Yes, he's from Cullen, indeed he is. Yes, I knew him well. He went to school, same as myself, to Cullen School. They had a shop in Cullen. His mother was Eileen May Keefe, and that was one of the shops where we did our shopping. But and then I went to school in Cullen. It was a 3 miles walk, Cullen National School. And there was a great tradition of Irish, learning Irish in Cullen. And,
Was your father a farmer?
Oh, yes, my father was a farmer. I suppose you call him a medium-sized farmer. Yes, he was a farmer.
And how many of you?
Oh, yes, yeah. There was six of us, and I'm the eldest of six myself. And Tade was next. He's died a few years ago there. Tade, and then there's Tom. Tom lives in Mill Street at the moment in his family. Tom and Dinny lives in Birmingham in England. And Connie lives near Mill Street, County Cork. And Catherine, my sister, lives near Cork City, Killeen's. She's married to Michael Casey there near Cork. But as I said, we went to school.
But you all got on fine, so.
We did.
Who stayed in the farm?
Who stayed in the farm was Tade. My brother Tade stayed in the farm, and he lived along with my mother and father. My mother, of course, was Molly, well-known Molly Scully. She's well-known and hugely involved with Seanchas Duhalla in her time, had great interest in it, and she had a massive amount of folklore and stories. And yes, and then Tade stayed living with them, and unfortunately Tade developed Alzheimer's and he's gone now from us, and so they're all gone. But my nephew lives there now, and my brother. But
And the farm is still there.
The farm is still there, yes, it's still in the Hickeys, which
still
is
in the family,
the Hickey family, yeah, which was great. But I suppose my mother would talk about my mother then. I mean, she had her background, I suppose a lot of her background, as I say, we spoke about the Scullies there coming from Tipperary to the Battle of Knocknanos.
Yeah, well, of course, that was a frightful battle.
That was a ferocious battle,
yeah,
yes,
I think
indeed.
There was a huge amount of loss of life.
That's
in
it.
That
there
battle.
Was the there's the famous a poem, isn't it? Golden Monsonor, or they call it McAllistrum's March nowadays.
And that was a Confederate war.
That was a Confederate war, yes, sure. Indeed. And then there was the story about the. All the people were burned in the church in Drumtariff. She said that story, and they were very scary stories to us when we were young. They were very scary stories indeed. And
but there was also great learning and ability to learn. I suppose people that come to mind would have been Father Dineen, who wrote the
that's right, yes,
he wouldn't have been
that far away from us, yes, we'd have been close to him, and he was hugely respected, and Padre O'Leary was actually his parents, you know, the O'Leary's, yeah, quite near us, and of course that was often spoken about as well. There was huge pride in all that type of thing. But my mother then, of course, brought in with her as I say, she could trace nearly all the women in that house down along from even like one, I suppose my great grandmother, Mary Scully, married John Scully, and she was born in 1799 and married in 1817. She was always telling us the story. And she was, I suppose, a remarkable woman too. But then there was two other brothers and Scullies, they were stepbrothers actually, they were actually O'Sullivans, they were hanged at the battle in Newmarket in 1822, and that was terrifying for us because my mother had the story, their heads were both spiked at the entrance gates to Rossacon there near Cantorque, and my great grandmother used to bake bread, and she was all this put out in the piers of the gates, and the poorer people, I suppose, to pick up loaves of bread or cakes of bread. And every day, and always her flour was supposed to be fooling her. She always had enough flour to keep doing it anyway. This was the folklore. But she brought along with her then from her mother's side, it was the stories of, Father Eugene Sheehy. She often spoke about him. He was a well-known Landeek priest. And he came to visit my mom's granny, early, I'd say about 1912. And one of the stories she was telling me, that he would say, I've come to see my cousin Mary Stack. So he came in on horseback. He was the well-known Landleague priest, Father Eugene Sheehy. She used to call him Father Owen Sheehy. But his cousin had just died that day, and he had then robed and said mass at the house. And he was a brother of David Sheehy, who was an MP at Westminster, who was the father of Hannah Sheehy Skeffington. And my job, all the stories we used to hear about my mother, about this lady with this weird name and how she broke the windows in Dublin Castle fighting for the vote for women and all this, you know. And I used to wonder, was it folklore? But in later years here, I did a course in Maynooth and that, and I came across it. I was amazed to find there was quite a number of books written on her. And this is actually a wing in UCD and then the women's studies section in UCD dedicated to her. So that was great to find.
Wasn't
even
a great
rediscover
feeling,
that. Yeah, it was
knowing
great,
that,
yeah.
That
yes.
All these great people came from
this
tiny little village,
yes,
in the barony of Duhallow.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they came, that lady, when my mother's course came from Cantorque, as I said, Rossacon, between Cantorque and Newmarket. And of course, as you said, myself in the barony of Duhallow, which was immersed in folklore. And history. And then every day, maybe passing the road, we'd go into Kit Hickey. She was Kit O'Keefe. Kit, of course, is the sister of Maurice O'Keefe, the well-known man for the music in Kiskame. Maurice, I think he's just 88 years old now. And that was a fantastic house. We used to so love going in there, roaming, you know, a roaming
yeah.
house.
And he's the last of the old.
He's one of the last of them.
Dúshlán,
yes.
traditional, you know, the sleeve, the real sleeve.
That's right. He is indeed.
What? Tell me, what kind of? Who was your teacher in the school there?
In the school in Cullen were the Kiley's.
Mrs. Tim Kiley, was it?
No, Roger Kiley and Mrs. Kiley, and their son is Dermot Kiley.
Dermot,
yeah, Dermot
yes.
is a great man, and Seanachas Duhalla as well.
Yes, indeed, yeah. The poet.
The poet Edward Walsh, yeah.
Tell me about him.
Yeah, he was born near Dara, there in the banks of Darraglen, in 1805. And with him, he was. It has never been identified yet who his mother was, but apparently, the father they eloped, you know, with a lady of much above his station, and for his sins, then he had to join the Cork North Cork militia. Now the McCarthys, one of the McCarthys, was the head of that at the time, whatever it was in Mill Street, but. They returned then after some years to he was born, as I say, in 1805, and he did return about 1815 to live in Dara near Cullen, and he obviously had education and he had English, but he collected all these fantastic poems, and there's a fantastic huge book out now by Father O'Riordan, Father J.J. O'Riordan, if you've come across him. He's written a massive book about him. He's been 30 years anyway researching him and doing stuff on him. So he's made a collection of all his works and poetry. And it's beautiful stuff. I mean, I know it's about someone's about the fairies and the forts and it's the chieftains. And
is there any descendants of that man now still living? Or
Of Edward Walsh?
Yeah.
Actually, the thing about it is then when I later, I suppose, when I maybe I will come to you later, I'm still back in Cullen, but in later years, I suppose it would be a lifetime now ahead, but I actually, through the genealogy, I got involved with genealogy and the big directory that came out, there was a huge directory used to come out that time, a tome of a book, and I found on it, this is people seeking people all over the world, and at the first day I ever opened the book, it showed up looking for relatives of the poet Edward Walsh, and I was fascinated. I thought, gosh, like, you know, I seem to know so much about him, and my mother had us related to him as well, not quite clear about it, but she said he was related somewhere. And this lady was from Australia, and she'd have been advertising for years to try to find any connection with that part of North Cork, and that was wonderful. She came to Ireland in 2000. That's Elizabeth Nunn, who lives in Queensland. And when I went to Australia, she took me around the Hickeys, where my granddad lived in Brisbane, which was fantastic, really. It was really fantastic. But Elizabeth is great-great-granddaughter. And John J. O'Riordan, who has written this book, is also a connection of his. And he's another man we're talking about for all the history and lore of the...
But did you ever find any descendants of that poet?
Oh, yeah, that lady, Elizabeth Nunn, of course, is his great-great-granddaughter.
Great-great-great-granddaughter.
Oh, yes, his great-great-granddaughter. Yes, indeed, she's his great-great-granddaughter. That's right, yeah.
Well, no, you know, with that kind of background and that attachment to Dúshlán and that part of the country, how in God's name did you ever find your way up here?
That's a
good story.
Yeah, that's a good question, all right. Now, what happened then was, I suppose I went to school on a bicycle to Sculver in Boherby. There was a lady called Mrs. Kerrisk up to Gerald's school in Boherby, I suppose, in the late, in the early 50s, no, it was earlier than that. I started school in Sculver in Boherby in 1953. It was about 5 miles on a bicycle. Of course, my mother was keen. I got some bit of education, more than what she would have had in her generation. So I went up and down there for so many years, and I eventually did my Leaving Cert. And the problem was then I would have liked to go on to be, I suppose, a teacher. I'd like to be a national teacher or something. But you had to do Easter Orals, and you had to, well, sewing I could do a bit, but I couldn't do any singing. And unfortunately, I got a record to my mother, I had a note in my head anyway. And I couldn't do these things called Easter Orals, which was common at that time in the 1950s. And I couldn't go to, what Carey's Fort was the teacher's college. So I did a little bit of teaching in Doon School. And Doon, of course, another marvellous place, Doon Fort and all that. It was only a small little school. It's gone now. And Murphy.
Was this helping out the teacher?
Yeah, helping out the teacher. You were kind of a junior assistant mistress. You was posts for unqualified teachers. And I did a few weeks there. I suppose I did 6 or 10 weeks there from September to Christmas. But he suggested, he said, if you go to England, you'll be able to get into training college easily in England, and it'll be quite easy and all this. So off I go to England, and it was 1960, and I remember thinking, will I go or will I stay? It was an awful decision to make, to have to go. There was no other jobs available at that time. So I got a job in a school in Birmingham, outside Birmingham, Coleshill. And I went off there then. And then I wasn't all that long there. In 1960, I met this guy called Pat Phibbs from Blessington. Now, I'd never heard the name before, and I really thought he was certainly pulling a fast one on me with such a name as Phibbs. I'd never heard of it. But anyhow, that's how it started. Then I...
Did you wind up marrying that man?
That's who I married eventually. But you see, the thing about that then, some good things came in. I didn't actually want to go to training college then. You see, I suppose I got ideas of getting married at some stage. And I didn't really want to go then. So I got a job then. And I suppose, anyway, and being in England, you know, it opened up to you what immigration was like. And you could feel for all the people that immigrated and how hard it was. Even only being in England, it was so lonesome being away, and I missed home so much, and I was so attached to home. In fact, there's not a day passes, even today, even any day, that my mind doesn't flit around some corner in Cullen, you know what I mean? And it was a huge insight into what immigration and life in Britain was for people. Of course, a lot of people from Cullen would have gone to America. But I worked then, actually. I got a job then. There was this thing called the Irish Information Centre, which was a place for immigrants if they wanted any information on accommodation and jobs. And one of my brothers came over, he was quite young, and I thought, what am I going to do with him? So I took him down to this priest at the Irish Centre in Moat Road that time. It's there near the city centre in Birmingham. And I think he got him a job or something, like in the buses or whatever. I think I'd found him digs. But anyway, he said to me, you know, he says, I have a job for you. I didn't know anything about this, but he just said to me, I have a job for you here, he said, if you'd like to do it. So whatever job I was at, I gave him my notice, and I wanted to start immediately with him. So I really enjoyed that, working with immigrants. It was a fantastic insight into people and meeting people. I really loved it.
Did you go to all the Irish centres and the...
Yeah, well, I mainly worked at the one in Birmingham. One in Birmingham. It was called the Irish Information Centre in Birmingham.
Oh, and that's where you experienced how difficult it was for these...
Very difficult indeed.
People. Were they young people? Mostly?
Yeah, mostly young people would arrive at the doorstep. Oftentimes, I suppose if they were sensible, they came to another family member, or came somebody. Most of them would probably arrive with very little money or no money. Now, I did see a family arriving one morning with a suitcase and 4 children. Some of them it was really hard. And then there was all that sort of thing. There was often even girls came. There was one girl sent over by her parish priest with a note for us to get her into a mother's home or somewhere.
Because she was pregnant.
She was having a child, yes. And I think that was off. She had no money, practically no money.
But and that was taboo in those days.
Oh, yes. It was taboo here in Ireland at the time. But yeah, there was. Well, of course, that time there was convents and all sorts of things for girls. Girls were easy enough to get jobs for, because a lot of them could get jobs in the hotels, which was living in as well.
Tell me the story about the parish priest.
Well, we didn't hear any more about that, but he just got her out of the local area, give a note with. She had a note with her to give to... of course, the Irish Centre was run by an oblate priest called Father Richard Murphy, a Belfast man. And it grew bigger after that too. But no, I didn't. I think we sent her to... We knew the nuns, you know, who had these homes that time, the mothers and babies' homes.
And were these girls looked down on? You know, were they taught as well, you know, they did something wrong?
Yeah, they would. That was certainly taboo, more or less, at that time. Yeah, it was. Obviously, she was a disgrace to the area, which was awful, really, for the poor girl. You know, it was really sad. But then that grew bigger, and Father Murphy left and went to Liverpool, and Father Paul Burden came in, and with him as well came a priest. It was Eamon Casey at the time, a brilliant man. I'd like to say a brilliant man. He did tremendous work in England, in Slough. He formed the Catholic Housing Aid Society there. He did brilliant work among the immigrants. He's never recognised for nowadays. I don't hear much about it. I only hear everything else. But he was a terrific man, terrific businessman. And could really steamroll what if he had a plan he got he could steamroll it through, you know. And then the hierarchy decided to post him to Kerry, to post, and it didn't suit him at all. Well, that's my opinion now, that's only my opinion. That, you know, he had so much to give, he was so valuable, brilliant man.
Do you think he would have done much better if he stayed there and,
yes,
and continued with his work?
Of course he would have done, yeah. He was a brilliant man, he was a brilliant man working with the Irish, very down to earth. I mean, I suppose, not fair to say, but he really, knowing him on the ground, I won't say he wasn't vicious material, but he was a man of the people and with the people and for the people at the time, you know. He was doing tremendous work in Birmingham, and set up the Catholic Housing Aid Society, which was, you know, it was, I suppose, similar, well, slightly like the credit union, but what they did was they bought houses, old houses, and converted them into flats, and like the two upstairs and the downstairs, two separate flats for young couples, young Irish couples getting married. And then they got a flat at a cheap rate. They weren't overcharged by landlords, and they were encouraged to save. So they saved with the Catholic Housing Aid Society, and that was some of my work on Friday nights. They came in with their books, little saving books, and we wrote in their money. And then when they had enough for a deposit for a house, they were helped and moved on to a little home of their own. And several were helped that way, and it was great for them.
Yeah.
It was tremendous work, and
was, I mean, this a
that
lot
could
of this,
work today. Even
was this voluntary mostly? Or?
Oh yeah, that was a lot of it was voluntary. Yes, eventually they did have a secretary there. We had a secretary then came in, and then as I said, Father Paul Burden was elected, promoted then to taking care of the Irish Centre, and then I left the Irish. I got married in 1968. Of course, in the meantime, I forgot to tell you where I met this. Did I tell you I met this Pat Fibbs at Cayley? Yes, at Cayley in Birmingham. Sure, I told you that. And then, as I say, we got married anyway in 1968, and I moved out then from the Irish Centre because Pat was working. I won't say working. He was working on the roadway, building England's motorway, as they say at the time, because England that time in the 50s was all being rebuilt after the war. There was tremendous work there for all the Irish going over, and they were flocking in for. You just stood at the corner on a Monday morning, they were picked up in trucks and got a job, you know, got jobs and got the start, as they used to call it at that time, and all that. And Pat was working in Birmingham with a firm, or he'd moved to Devon. So when we got married then, we were living in Devonshire. And of course, I was removed then from the Irish Centre because I left because I got married. I chose to get married.
But how long were you working in the Irish Centre?
I was there 6 years, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I'd never have left it, I think. When I'd been going off with Pat Fibbs, and we went to live in Devon, and I suppose I was totally removed then from the whole atmosphere. It was a great place to work.
But was it? I mean, did you find it very stressful, very hard trying to deal with situations?
Well, I suppose initially, I suppose I met them. I was the receptionist. I mean, I wasn't a social worker, so I was the receptionist. I met them. I took down their details, and then Father Murphy, or Father Byrne, as it was eventually. But sorted them out, whatever it was, we sorted them out then. Yeah, so, well, I suppose I didn't think it, I got used to it, but some of it was stressful enough, yeah. And then you might send lads to digs, and then the landlady was ringing up, giving out about them, they came in drunk, or you got bits of different things. It was good and good, yeah, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, though.
But were they coming in their flocks?
Well, no, not so much, quite a few, not in flocks as such. Because really what was beginning to happen then towards the end of the 50s, well, I was there in the 60s now, it was slightly beginning to wane off, the big tide of immigration. It was beginning to wane slightly off. And I suppose things were getting slightly better in Ireland. They weren't coming in flocks as such, but quite a few would pass the doors up and down over the years, you know. And I recorded all their details in a little card and a box or an index, and I believe now they're available research stuff here. They have them in the Archbishop's House in Dublin because it was founded by the Archbishop of Dublin, I don't think it would have been John Charles McQuaid, and I believe now they're in the diocesan archives, a lot of those records.
And those people, they came from all corners of
all
Ireland?
All corners of Ireland, yes, all corners of Ireland, yes, indeed. I think we even had a few that could hardly speak English from the west of Ireland. We did have a few people like that, even an oldish man, I remember. There was some very sad cases, yeah, as well. People disinherited or lost their homes or one thing or another and came to work there. But I could feel all what it was like for the immigrant as well.
And did they all feel that they, you know, that this was all going to be a perfect life now if we immigrate and go to England. Did people generally think that things were much better over there?
Oh, I think they probably did. I mean, if you're thinking, let's say you're back in Cullen and you're thinking, well, there was, as the times were tough in those years, in the early years of the state, I suppose, the 50s were really tough here in Ireland at that time. There was little money. In the 60s, actually, when I went to England now, outside Cullen Chapel, there was all horses and traps tied along the ditch, every bit of fence or post or bush along. That's why I remember it well. And I remember, I think, I'd say about 1964, there was a tremendous change in a very short few years in the 60s. You could see the change because Ireland was picking up then. It was becoming industrialised. And what I noticed then, the Volkswagen cars began to come in, the Beetles. Everybody was beginning to get a Beetle car. Things were getting better here because there was probably bits of factories starting up where the men could work. And the immigration wasn't going on as much. But what some of the big problem of the Irish in Birmingham was, and again, I suppose, they were, when they were away from their own area, and it probably was the pubs and the pub culture and drinking. But I mean, with the Irish dance halls, which were fantastic in a way, like you could go there and you had the Cayley dancing ones. One part of the thing would downstairs probably Cayley, and upstairs pop music and this kind of thing. We had all that sort of thing. I met Pat at the Cayley dance, the school halls then on Saturday nights.
So after 6 years, the two of you moved up country then?
Yes, we moved to Devon, for a number of years. And then that's because Pat, of course, was in County Wicklow and I was in County Cork. And we were married in Mill Street Parish Church in the 4th of September 1968. And then we returned to live in Devon. And I had two children born there. Then, unfortunately, our life changed again because Pat's brother, who was living on the home farm in Blessington, Pat's brother Jim, died in an unfortunate accident. And we sought to basically return to run the farm where I live now, to live then with Pat's father and mother. And that was a huge change again for me coming back. But one of the big, I suppose, that led me then to different things in my life. I suppose you're gaining ground. But then I had no idea that I was really, well, I knew, I suppose, you know, you have kind of an interest in history, but it had been so much in our local history and tradition and folklore, would have been so much background in my life, you know, that it was just there, you didn't think about it too much. But I remember then we got a letter in Blackrock from somebody in Australia trying to trace the Phibbs, who like lived in Blackrock in the 1830s. I think they immigrated to Australia in about the 1850s. And nobody, even, and I mean, the Phibbs is like the Scullys, living there for 200 years in Blackrock. They're a long, old, established family there. And there's two or three lots in there were farming there all together, side by side. And I found this fascinating, that the old people didn't know anything about this man, particular man. And I found that fascinating, and I began to take a little interest in it. And I remember ringing up here. At that time, it was only the four course. Even that time now, in the mid-80s, they hadn't anything developed in Dublin as regards genealogy very much. It was in the four courts records were kept. So I remember ringing the four courts. I remember just wondering, how would you find out more about somebody? And this man said, well, he said, there's a young man called Paul Gorry. And he said, he's from your area, he's from Baltinglass. And he's starting to get starting stuff in local our family history. And of course, he is the father figure of genealogy in Ireland, is Paul Gorry, who I know very well since. But and then one of my children was in fourth class. This was the next bit then. And he was, one day his project was to write down, to write down your granny and your great granny's maiden name. And of course, Connor from all the background. And I mean, luckily, all my children knew my father and mother. And that was huge influence on them as well. What happened then is I was at an ACE history talk in ACE, and there was a lady there give a talk and about starting a genealogy class or course, Noreen Higgins from Kilfeekle in County Tipperary. And I thought, when Blessing in that time, they were starting to do history talks once a month, a history night, and I was lovely, enjoyed that so much. And I said to them in Blessington, I wonder if I could get this lady to do a course in Blessington. Oh yeah, they were very interesting. So they got in touch with Noreen and she travelled. I think she was teaching near Portlaoise. She travelled something like 60 miles once a week up to Blessington anyway for 10 weeks or whatever. And we had a genealogy course, about 16 of us on it. So then at the end of the course, this was in 1997, I think it was, yeah. So at the end of the course, we said we'd stay together and form a family history group. So this was it. That's how we started up. I was one of the founder members of Blessington Family History Group. and that's led me on now to bigger things, where I am, I suppose, today. Then being secretary of that, well, I suppose you're everything at the beginning when things are starting up. I was secretary of that for 8 years, and I got made so many contacts with so many people in all walks, especially local history and in genealogy, and being a delegate to CIGO, that's the Council of Irish Genealogical Organisations there in Dublin. I got to meet all the people, I suppose you could say, now top people, I'm pleased to say, in genealogy. I got to meet all them. I got to contact with so many people. I suppose I loved the work as secretary. I was making contacts and we were sharing stuff, information with other history groups, which was fantastic. So then that went along. I did a course in local history then in Maynooth, and a great help here with Ciarán Swords from the library here. I did two courses. I did a diploma in local history and a certificate in local history. One of the courses was run here in Talla Library, which was fantastic. And we got, it's great, the library here.
But what I think is wonderful about the work you're doing is how that you can trace families back. But this was all part of what you grew up with in Cullen, with your mother tracing all her, you know, being so interested herself and then leading on from that.
Yeah.
But in during the course of your work in Blessington, would you have put a lot of family names together? Would you have delved into family histories?
Yeah, well, we would have local family histories, yes. People would ask you, and I did bits of research on people, and I got to know how to use all the repositories.
Oh, what are the names in Blessington that date way back now?
I suppose the Phibbs is one of them. You'd have names like Boardman and Miley's and Walls. There'd be different kind of names now to what you'd meet in Cullen. You wouldn't meet the different sort of names, would be local to there, you know. We have Carols, I suppose there might be some of them. All those kind of names now.
But would they be mostly landed gentry names?
No, not really. No, there wouldn't be. Not really, no. The most of them were all tenant farmers there. Be all tenant farmers. And we had the Marquis of Downshire, who was the landlord in Blessington, and We were tenants of his, or the Phibbses were tenants of his, and I suppose you trace the history of Ireland through the different stages, and they opted out or sold up or went off in about 1908 then, and all the tenants bought out their farms, which was a norm out throughout the country in that Land Act of 1908. But but what followed on from that, I suppose I'd have to say, is then I got then involved with Irish Roots. That's a magazine. I don't know if you heard of my Irish Roots magazine. But of course, then last year, I suppose a year ago, I wouldn't believe where I eventually did arrive at. But Tony McCarthy then, from Cork, established Irish Roots. He founded Irish Roots magazine, and he ran it for 16 years, and wanted to get rid of it. He made a huge contribution to it. And that's a genealogy magazine which goes worldwide. And again, connecting, as for my word I use, is connecting people all over the world. So it was for sale then, but it was going concern, and then it was going to finalise and finish up. So I said to one of my daughters, Julie, you know, I'm kind of interested in it, but, you know, I'd have to have help with all the technical stuff. And she said, go for it, Mum, go for it. So we bought Irish Roots magazine. So that's where I am today, from my local history in Blessington, and I suppose from my mother's background and all that, all gelled together, and that's where I am today. I'm editor of Irish Roots magazine at the moment.
So you're now editor of Irish Roots. My goodness.
Right. That's a long and
wonderful story to get you to that point. But that's, you become immersed in the work, don't you?
You do indeed. And I suppose, again, backtracking to Cullen and Shanachas Duhalla, you see, they published a magazine every 2 years in Cullen for the last 30 years. My mother was very much involved with it, and it's a fantastic piece of work. And then I couldn't understand it, like, locally. Nobody's doing anything about a history publication of any sort. I had no interest in it, even with the history group I was with. But we did publish something. We published a little book called Blessington Now and Then, which is a huge seller, actually, as it was, and I was delighted to do that. And I was involved with another magazine, Lacan Pictorial History. And in that, like yourself, I interviewed quite a few old people, which was nice. And most of them are actually dead now, and that was for the 2000, for the publication in 2000. And I enjoy that, and I have a huge interest as well in oral history and local, as I say, local history. I'm very much interested in oral history as well. I think it's great, great.
But your own maiden name, Hickey. Hickey is a very interesting name, isn't it?
That's right. Yes.
How far back? Where did the Hickeys originally come
from?
Well,
of course, they always tell the story. The Hickeys came from Clare. They were physicians to the kings of Thomond. Hickey, oh Hickey, Hickey, it means healer. And strangely enough, for quite a few Hickeys are doctors. We have relatives in America. When they went to America, they went on to be doctors. There was another Dr. Con Hickey. He's dead now, but he lived in the States. And my father used to trace them to the Hickeys of Mount Kay, and that's up there near above or up around Knocknagree. And a lot of them were buried in Oakville Cemetery, the old cemetery in Oakville. And then, of course, now Cullen, the new church in Cullen. But another thing, I suppose, this is when we were young then, there was supposed to be three breeds of Hickeys around Cullen. It was the mean Hickeys, the decent Hickeys, and the foxy Hickeys. So I was always very worried in case we
Sorry, were, the mean Hickeys?
The mean Hickeys, the decent Hickeys.
The decent
Hickeys. Decent Hickeys. Yeah. And the foxy Hickeys.
And the foxy.
And as a child, I was very worried in case we were from the mean Hickeys. I don't know who the mean Hickeys were, we were just... I don't know, some sort of a generalisation, because there are a huge number of Hickeys in Cullen Parish at all. There are a huge amount of Hickeys. I suppose you have to have something to... And what they had down there, the amount of nicknames is unbelievable, the amount of nicknames was in all the different families, to discern them. In fact, you wouldn't know who was so. You wouldn't know whether there were Hickeys or Murphys, because there were so many Murphys with nicknames. Big, long, double-barrelled, triple-barrelled names. We were the Contaid Cons anyway. We were the Contaid Con Hickeys that identified us maybe from somebody else, you know. But anyway, as Escher got over there.
But the village itself was called Cullen. But it was Cullen na
Cullen na Cuíve, yeah. The
village of the O'Keefes.
The village of the O'Keefes, that's right, yes.
Can you trace the O'Keefes for me?
Yeah, well, the O'Keefes, I suppose, were landlords. And they had one of the things is they used to be the old O'Keefes. There's one great story about a battle in Cullen. There was a huge battle fought in Cullen, a faction fight in Cullen. It was against the Hickeys and the O'Keefes. But the O'Keefes used to bring their dogs to Mass in Cullen and the old churchyard now in Cullen. They used to bring their dogs to Mass in Cullen. And the priest objected to that. One of the stories, there are a few different stories. One story is that the priest objected to the dogs being in the church and he stopped the Mass. And he asked them to take them out and they didn't. But then there was another story about an O'Keefe had a child and the priest called out from the altar a couple of Sundays, who was the father of the child. And then apparently the child spoke, some Daniel O'Keefe or something like that. But anyway, what happened then, the priest had to go off on horseback. The priest had to rush away on horseback in his priest's robes from the church in Cullen, heading for... I suppose towards Knocknagree or Nohaville, and up, I suppose it's at the top of our land, I think it is, maybe a bit further up. There's a anyway, when he got to cross the river on the horse, he crossed the river okay, and a huge flood rose up from the river. This is the story, the folklore story, and it's called Aunalingabawn, they call that river. But a huge river, a huge flood rose up, and the enemy in pursuit, the key O'Keefes couldn't catch up with him. Now, there's a tradition about all along there's in our place at home, by the side of our farm, we call it the Glosha. Now, when an O'Keefe used to die, the dogs used to bark up along, they apparently used to go up along the side of the river, the Glosha, where my grandfather supposed to have heard them. And they went up, and the dogs would be in the air, they could see them going along in the air. And they'd go up so far, but they couldn't cross above at where this river was, they went way, way up. Fields up, and they couldn't cross because, of course, the river was there, and they had to come down the other side. But that always signalled a death of an O'Keefe, of this that branch of the O'Keefes, those land owners. But that tradition has died out now. My grandfather said, supposed to have heard the Keefe's dogs, and of course, I was terrified of Keefe's dogs. But that went out, and probably went out with electricity as well. Come with electricity, to Cullen.
Maureen Phibbs, I could go on forever with you. I think the story and your life story is amazing, coming to where you are here today. So listen, thank you very much for telling me your story.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you, Morris, as well. Yeah.
So you worked closely with Bishop Eamon Casey, and you knew one of his secretaries too, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I did. We see, Eamon was in London. Eamon Casey was in London, and I was in Birmingham, and they formed a branch. Father Murphy was in the beginning. Father Richard Murphy formed a branch of the Catholic Housing Aid Society in Birmingham. So of course, Eamon Casey, Father Eamon Casey at the time, came up to oversee all this and set it up. So he visited the Irish Centre regularly where I was working, and he used to tea in my flat, and there was a girl there then. There was a girl who was from Limerick. He was very good to people, in spite of what's been said, which is a lot, I know, but he was very good to this young girl who lived in the Irish Centre. She sort of lived with me. She was handicapped, and she was brought up with her grandmother in Limerick, and he came to meet her, came to look after her, or came to see her frequently to see she was okay for money and whatever, and that was very good of him, you know. And as I say, he used to come to meetings, and I'd meet him quite often. I'd meet him on a regular basis quite often.
Would he have set a lot of young families up? Would he have got houses for them?
He would have got quite a few houses for them, yeah. It was a very successful scheme, and it was tremendously successful in London, in Slough. Tremendously successful, yeah. And there's no doubt about it, yeah. He did. There's a lot of people very grateful to him over there, yeah.
Could you tell me you spoke as well about the girl that came over pregnant because of the disgrace at home,
yes,
and that she had to go. Now, would you have found many of those cases?
A few of them. They'd probably be kind of discreet. You might get a priest writing to Father Murphy ahead of time, and he might meet her off the boat. You see, at New Street Station where they came in from the boat and on the train into Birmingham. And they'd be probably brought along to the convents, you know, where they probably might work in the convent, or they had their baby. Usually the baby was taken up or given up for adoption then, which was very sad, you know, it was very sad, yeah. But, that'd be more discreet. Sometimes I might know all about it because the priest or somebody would have arranged with Father Murphy. But he would help the best he could.
Would the mother stay or go back again?
I wasn't sure what the follow-up story was that it was. But we eventually then had a nun came to work, Father Paul Byrne, when he came in. Then a sister Cameron McGowan, she was called Sister Dominic that time, and she was a social worker. She came to work then among the Irish in Birmingham, and she saw some desperate cases of hardship among young Irish families and big families, and hardship with drink and bad housing as well, which would give more impetus to the Catholic Housing Aid Society, yes, and that's the scheme. And it's still, as far as I know, I think it's still in Birmingham. It's changed a bit now, but all those premises, that moat road, is all demolished, and there's a big car park there now. And they got offices then in St. Chad's Cathedral, and it went along from there. And now they have they're in Digbeth, in Digbeth. Then at that time, there was the Irish Centre then, at that time, it was a three-storey building, you know, just a house, I suppose. And we had a little shop there which sold all records from Ireland and Aran sweaters and all things like that, rosary beads and things for Holy Communion, and get quite a few people coming in for all these things. I suppose I remember having a record by Diana. She had a little record. Her uncle, I think, was working in Birmingham. He brought in a record. This is, of course, before the Eurovision. And, of course, we were selling it, having it there for sale. But, of course, the marvellous thing is when she won the Eurovision, it was great for her as well, it exploded, you know. But I do remember having a record over there, nobody heard of her. She was only young, of course, at the time. But,
All this time was just before the troubles and the bombing in Birmingham, yeah.
Yes.
Did you experience any of that?
I just actually had left. I had left by the time that had happened. I left Birmingham in 68. That happened in 1973. But I suppose there was people holding meetings there. There was things going on. There was a branch of Sinn Féin in Birmingham, all right, and various things like that. But I'd say in the Irish Centre, they used to hold all the counties had their own organisation then. And most of the counties would hold meetings in the Irish Centre. There was a meeting room there. Then come St. Patrick's Day, they all had their banners out and huge crowds would march in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Birmingham, which was very big. Then, unfortunately, it had to be stopped after the bombings. I knew well where the place was. It was quite close to us. It was in the Bullring where that bombing happened, which was sad too. And that did a lot of harm with the image of the Irish in Birmingham at the time. But I had just left at that stage. As I said, I left in 68. I think that was 73 when that happened. But I was out of it when that that had happened. I was just actually back to Ireland at that time. Yeah. But, yeah.
And when you heard about that, did it really upset you?
Yes, it did, indeed. It did, indeed. But I suppose I'd have to say, this father, Richard Murphy, was a militant man in his own way. And I'd say now, he left Birmingham in 1966. Now, I remember well, he was from Belfast, and he used to go to Donegal and various places, and he'd bring over Ireland sweaters. He'd actually bring them with him in the car from Ireland when he came back from his holidays. And there was a lady started something in the north for civil rights. I remember this well, and he brought this huge, a couple of hundred leaflets about the civil rights campaign in the north and all. So anyway, one night, he got me. I was told to go up to there was a big hall there, the market hall, just close to the Bullring, a big huge hall, and Wilson was speaking. Can't think of his name now.
He was Prime Minister at the time. Yeah.
Anyway, he was Prime Minister at the time, and he was giving a big rally or speech in there. But anyway, he gave me these leaflets to stand outside the hall and give these out to people as they came out, which I did. I gave out 1,000 that night to people. Some of them threw them on the ground. It was a bit of propaganda about civil rights in the North. Now, this was in the 60s. This is before it really broke out in the North. But I did do that. But I suppose you wouldn't do it again, or it wouldn't have been done a few years after. But he was very aware of civil rights, and he was very aware of what was going on in the North, because he was living in Belfast, and he was aware of, the different things. And Catholics didn't have jobs. And,
all right, but he did show his colours, and he was very militant in his ways.
Yes, he certainly was, and very much, I suppose, for justice in the North, and I certainly did that bit anyway. I always remember that, and I think of it after. Yes, it's quite an amusing thing to have done. Yeah, it was one of the things I did, yes.